You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limit. Go to gamesense.ab.ca and learn more. The head was an assistant for the previous five, got promoted. Also, at the same time, just wrapped up her first year as the strength and conditioning coach for all the teams at Grant McEwen Athletics, and then also as a performance coach at Archetype. Melissa Lowe joins us. Melissa, how many hours in the day are you working? What's going on here?
It's about 12 hours most days, yeah. What's sleep?
Yeah, so like I guess. So like so you work at Archetype, you're telling me 7 to 11, then you go to the Old Kings for a few hours in the day, and then you finish with Grant McEwen, because obviously their students are in class during the day, and then they train at night. And so when you're going to Grant Mac, like is the schedule, do you do like two or three teams every night?
Yeah, it usually depends. It's front loaded with a lot of their games being weekends, Friday, Saturdays. So usually Monday, Tuesday are busier days. And then I usually run a scratch workout earlier in the day for the athletes that aren't traveling, athletes that aren't playing on Fridays and Saturdays. And then on Oil Kings game days, I head back to the rink for our scratch workouts and then for our pre and post game stuff. So there's some days I leave the house at like 6:30 in the morning and I'm rolling home at like 11 p.m.
Oh, my goodness. So what we like to do with Who Is It Wednesday, we always like to look at different jobs in sports and kind of take it back to kind of how it started. And of course, your uncle Kevin played for the Oilers, and your dad Ken was on the staff for, geez, what is it, like 30 some years, I think it was. I know you were a bobslayer. Did you play hockey growing up?
Yeah, I did. I started figure skating. I actually was late into hockey. Didn't really, you know, with the trainers at the Oilers, which my dad was, you know, you lose your dad for about 8 months of the year. They work the longest hours. That's maybe where I got it from. He would work 6 a.m. to midnight. So I didn't really, kind of get a little resentful as a kid that dad's not around. And so I figure skated, and then it was the 2006 playoff run that, because I grew up with the devastation of the Dallas exits.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really till, like, I was born in 93, so I missed the glory days. My sister was around, but I wasn't. So I only knew first round and out. So with the 2006 playoff run really inspired me, and I started playing then. And so I played for about 6 or 7 years. By that point, the game had kind of advanced that I was behind. So I was just a grinder, but I just loved to play and loved to train and played until I was 18, and then made the transition to bobsled from there.
And so you were telling me that, so when you're 13 or 14, your dad, Ken, would bring you to the Oilers and just say, here, you know, you go to the rink and do whatever you want.
Even younger, like when I was a kid, you know, there's a picture that was in the Edmonton Journal. It was myself, David Musil, and my cousin Keegan. And we were probably 4 or 5. And we're out on the ice with my Beanie Babies that for some reason I brought to the rink, using them as pucks. And my mom didn't know the extent of how free reign childcare it was. Like, my dad would be in the dressing room and he'd be like, hey, do whatever you want. Like, we're leaving at this time.
And you're 5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'd run, like, we'd rollerblade on the upper concourse. Like, when they were closing Rexall Place, we were going down to, you know, club access. And I was like, oh, mom, just follow me. And she's like, where are we going? And there's all these just little tunnels that I knew about. And then when I got older, I got more interested in fitness, and I'd, you know, run the bowl, I'd run the stairs, and if there was no players in the weight room, and just Mac T was working out, my dad let me like go in there, and I'd work out with Mac T. And so I was just always a little bit of a rink rat, and that really inspired me to kind of lean into the strength conditioning field.
So you started training when you were 13 years of age. Is it because, you know, you just saw the players there, you just gravitated for? What was it that kind of got you so interested in wanting to do that?
I just enjoyed it. Like, I would get, you know, when players were done with them at the end of the year, they'd have their workout books, and I would get to take one of them, and I would try to do the workouts. And
oh, okay.
Just kind of always liked being in the weight room side of things.
Yeah.
And just really enjoyed it, and, you know, I'm lucky now that I've been able to do that as a job, so...
So you went from hockey, then you got into bobsleigh for a bit. And, you know, it's funny. We had I've had quite a few different bobsleighers on the show, and it's such a powerful sport, right? Like, it's not a sport that you necessarily have to, like, hockey, you know, there's a lot of skills to it, per se. In bobsleigh, like, there's, you know, it's a little bit maybe more simple. It's just power, raw power. You got to be explosive. You got to be quick. And obviously you got to learn how to, you know, drive on there or sit in the back, wherever, what your role is. It's a lot easier if you're not the driver. But that, do you find that bobsleigh is just, it's just like a pure power sport, and it just comes down to who can be stronger and quicker?
Oh, yeah. It's a speed sport for sure. Like, they recruit heavily now out of track and field. On the men's side, they recruit out of football. It's for sure, it's that first step, power and strength. Like, I kind of got flagged as a prospect for bobsled when I was 17. I could back squat like 315 pounds and I could sprint decently for a hockey player. So they look at that raw strength because the sleds, the minimum sleds are 400 pounds.
You're squatting 315?
Yeah.
Jeez, good for you.
I can trap, like, I was trap bar deadlifting over four. So I was, you know, a little, like, I'm a thicker, solid body type. So, yeah. But I could move half decently. Like, you always can cheat sprint technique. So the fact you had the raw strength, that's what kind of, you know, earmarked me for potential. And then I think you just have to have a little bit of maybe a screw loose up top to willingly go down at 150K down in a metal coffin, essentially.
Yeah. But
so, yeah, there's definitely, you know, and I think that's helped me in training. Like, I can train sprint mechanics now very
right.
well because I wasn't a sprinter and I had to learn. So, like, that's something, especially crossover all sports, speed kills in every sport. So that element definitely helps me in my career now.
Melissa Lowe joins us. She's the strength and conditioning coach for the Edmonton Oil Kings, as well as Grant McEwen Athletics. And you mentioned sprint training, and really, like, speed kills in every sport. Now, like, there's not many sports that you don't need to be fast. Like, I guess maybe curling. But, like, you need to be quick. So how many people have bad mechanics, and how easy is it to change them to get good mechanics in running?
Every hockey player has bad mechanics. It's painful to watch. Like, we do, you've probably seen my guys out when we're in the Zamboni area and we'll do a track warm up, and I just have to be like, it hurts my brain because they just move so differently. And I think hockey is very different because it's the only sport we have dry land training, right? Then the movements of the sport are so different
yes.
from running. So
yeah.
There's never been a hockey player that I've watched sprint. I'm like, oh, he's a good sprinter. It's just non-existent. You usually see football, soccer, but really at the end of the day, in a sporting context outside of track and field, athletes don't think about mechanics when they're in their sport, right? They're just thinking about get to point A, get to point B, get to the ball, get to, you know, get to the puck. So they're never really thinking about sprint mechanics, but you can definitely like zone in on it if that's an area, especially that they need, that can cross over to their sport.
Right.
But, you know, my job with them is to make them better in their sport. So we'll do a little bit of, on our beginning of our off season, we might do a little bit of track technique. So when we're doing sprints, they're not going to hurt themselves. But I learned quickly that it's like banging your head on the wall if you're going to try to turn an athlete like a hockey player, or that their modality isn't running, into a runner. It's just, there's no real, you know, transfer to performance either.
So is that a mistake then for anybody out there that, you know, they're putting their son or daughter, oh, we got to get him into sprint training so it's going to help him in hockey? Is there a benefit that you see, or is it more of a hindrance?
Oh, it's 100% a benefit though. Like, I think spring hockey, and this might be a controversial take, but working with athletes and specifically hockey players, I mean, like, being on ice all year round is not good
okay.
for players ever.
Okay.
So putting them in a running sport or putting them in a track and field, they're doing something different. Like, I've known James Hamlin that was with the Oilers in yep. Bakersfield for years, and he's the best all-around athlete I've ever come across, and he played high-level soccer, track and field, up until basically in the Western League you can't compete in other sports until he's 16, and that translates to being a more all-around athlete. So for sure, like, I don't think they necessarily need specific sprint training, but get them playing soccer, get them playing other sports that's not hockey, because that's going to help their overall athleticism.
Interesting that, you know, and I know you say it's controversial, but I totally understand. And I think there's a lot of people that, so when you say it's not beneficial to be playing all the time, what is the hindrance that parents need to hear that they're really not helping their 12 and 13 and 14 year old, heck, as young as 9 or 10, by playing this more often? What is the biggest concern that you see?
You can look and just watch a hockey player move on the ice. The movement patterns are not natural, right? The forward posture, rounded forward. The mechanism of skating is very hard on the hip capsule. You know, you see more and more now, younger and younger athletes are having to have labrum surgeries on their hips, like, because it is very aggressive movement, and it's not something that biomechanically we were born to do.
Okay.
So, and we just had our exit meetings with the Oil Kings, and the biggest bane of my existence is getting the boys to take time off, get off the ice, because, you know, they're so talented that they can pick it up in 8 weeks from now. They're not good. They didn't get worse, but they need to, their feet need to break. Like, they have the worst foot strength when you have them in running shoes, because the hockey boot does all that work for you, right? The ankle, like, so you see a lot of high ankle sprains. You see a lot because the musculature atrophies because a hockey skate can do that work for you. So the minute you get them sprinting and they go to change direction, bang, you see more Achilles injuries.
Yes.
Right? Because they're so overloaded in one type of movement that, you know, doing that all year round, the body can only take so much. And now, like, you know, a perfect example is players maybe had longer careers 20, 30 years ago because the mileage didn't add up as quick. Like, kids there now that are skated all year round from 12, so they get to their first year pro, or, you know, they're playing in Europe, and the mileage at that age compared to somebody 30 years ago is probably 3 or 4 times it. So you're shortening your career longevity too. And also, like, that's where burnout happens.
Yes.
Right? If you're always doing the same thing, like, you know, get out of the rink for 2 months, like, you know, and then you're craving to get back on it. So I had some battled conversations being like, you need to take time off. But I think that starts at a young age when they're just always in hockey. And I don't blame parents. They want to give their kids their best advantage. But
it sounds like it's not the best advantage.
No, not right? They're going to develop. Like, let them play other sports, develop their athleticism, you know, tissue tolerance, and that's going to actually give them longevity.
What is tissue tolerance?
It's just like your... It's a fancy word for just having, you know, your muscles, your tendons, having, you know, being able to withstand load.
Okay.
So just doing different movements, stress them different ways. So if you just do the same repetitive movements, that's where you see, you know, tears and injury. Mm-hmm. But if you do different movements, you're stressing them in different ways, you build stronger lines in all your connective tissue.
Melissa Lowe joins us. She's a strength and conditioning coach for the Edmonton Oil Kings, as well as Grant McEwen Athletics. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, we started how you're a rink rat, and then you get to university and how you get into strength and conditioning, and what's the ultimate goal. We'll get to all that and more on The Gregor Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Wednesday, of course, you got into sports a lot from your dad, Ken, because he just had you around the rink. He liked playing it. Then you went into bobsleigh. And then when you were done bobsleigh, what made you decide that, okay, strength and conditioning rather than being a trainer? Because, like, was dad trying to push you, or, hey, maybe you want to be a trainer, come follow me? How did that go?
Oh, he's actually the opposite. And I think having daughters, he's protective because, you know, flashback 10 years ago, it's definitely been opened up more for females. But okay. Athletic training, he always would say, like, I don't necessarily think you want to go this way because it just seems like it's very male dominated. So he wasn't ever pushing me in that route. But I loved working out. And so kind of finding, my dad always says, like, if you find something you love doing, you never work a day in your life. So, and that's the case for him. So I just loved being in the gym and just trying to find ways to have jobs in the gym. And I'm not the type of person that can be a personal trainer. I need to be training for a goal and working with, you know, a certain type of athlete that, like, is motivated. So I knew I didn't want to just do personal training. I knew I wanted the pressure of trying to make somebody better at their sport. So strength conditioning kind of became the obvious route there.
So is kinesiology like a must have if you want to go in this field?
Yeah. So I went to the U of A, and when I originally got into the program, it was called Bachelor of Physical Education.
Okay.
It was the last school really to have that. And it's basically a kinesiology degree, but you weren't getting recognized. People, I'd say I'm in phys ed, and like, oh, you're going to be a gym teacher? But you actually couldn't be a gym teacher unless you did the combined ed degree.
Yeah.
So they eventually changed it. I was the first grad class of the kinesiology program. That's basically the starting point. And then you have to just start doing different sport specific certifications from there. But basically now, even more so, the masters are becoming more important in high performance like sport. So looking at probably doing a master's to add to that.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, because there's so much changing and it comes to nutrition and training and just understanding how the body works. I'm guessing it's almost like you're upgrading school all the time.
Yeah. You're always, you know, every trainer is looking to better their craft and have the most update information, and especially in a sports performance setting, that's crucial. Games are won and lost, and so you're always upgrading, you're always, you know, finding more research, you're always reading articles, you're always doing courses. But that keeps you fresh too, and like, you can feel like when you're, okay, I need to like find something to, you know, change something up here, I need to find a different course, or so you're just always kind of trying to keep it fresh for your athletes and also for yourself too, and make sure you're up to date on, because you know, more research comes out and something you might have thought was great 5 years ago now we find is maybe as beneficial. So everything's adapting with just the more information that you get.
I'm just going to get you to pull your mic a little closer to you. There you go. Yeah, that'll be easier. As Melissa Lowe joins us, you mentioned earlier how personal training wasn't for you. You wanted to have a goal. So at the start of the season, you know, now this year is probably different. We'll get into that. It's like, hey, guess what? I'm the first year as a strength and conditioning coach, and everybody and their dog is getting injured in the first few weeks of the season. So we'll get into that. But so when you have a goal, you outline each individual package for each player, and do you sit down with them one-on-one, or is it like the defensemen do this, the forwards do this, the goalies do this? How does it work?
In a perfect world, you'd be able to do that. There's just myself and my assistant Mason, Kenny, and we basically periodize in season differently from off season. So in season, we're looking at where we're playing. Junior hockey, we play 68 games minimum. So you're not necessarily being able to individualize, because you've got, you know, a Marc Lajoie on our back end that's playing 30 minutes a night, and then you have 16-year-olds that are, you know, playing less than that. Then you have your forwards. So it you have to kind of program for the group. Okay. In our exit meetings and in the off season, and I have guys that stay and train with me in the summer, then you can, you know, program like, this guy needs to get faster, this guy needs to, you know, this was his injuries this year, we need to work on this. Goalies are obviously different. So Colby Hay, our starter, I spent a lot of time when he was a backup behind Sebastian Kosa. He wasn't playing very much, so we were able to really kind of build out a program that he's now really self-reliant. And with our younger goalie, it's kind of doing the same thing there. But in a perfect world, you'd be able to like have individual programs. But at the end of the day, where everybody's playing the same schedule, everybody's got the same travel schedule. So you're programming for where we are in season and what the whole bulk of the team kind of needs.
So when you're looking at a player wants to get faster, and you've talked about being on the ice all the time, like, you know, there's some concerns with that. So what are some of the best ways to allow young hockey players to work on their speed that's going to translate on the ice?
A lot of it's a processing thing too. It's your central nervous system. So a lot of agility things where you have to change direction. I break down speed into three components: your deceleration, so slowing the body down,
okay,
the acceleration, speeding the body up, and then the conversion of the two.
Okay.
So you have to work all three factors. So deceleration would be, you know, depth jumps where you're catching yourself, being able to stop the body in time. There's also a major injury prevention component of that, being able to slow your body down in time. Acceleration is your sprints, your speed work, right? Or getting the body going. And then that last piece is that agility piece where you go from one direction to the other direction, because you're never going straight ahead in hockey. You know, you're always stop starts, you know, being able to transition from one direction and get the other way, going the other way faster. That's kind of the key. So a lot of that is breaking down the components and then working that agility piece. And agility doesn't mean agility ladders. That does not make your feet faster.
Okay.
So it's more reactionary. So like, you know, reacting to a call of a sprint or change of direction, all stuff like that, going off a different player.
What about the cone drill?
Depends if they've done it all the time. Because if they know the cone drill, if you change cones around and they have to adapt. Like one of the best drills that I've done is you have cones and you have different color tennis balls on them, and they have to change the balls to different cones, and the pattern's always different. So
they literally have to grab the ball off the cone
and change it to a different color, like put it on a different cone with it's a different color. So they have to react in the time.
You got to be able, and I love that you mentioned that, because I think there's so much emphasis on, okay, you got to pass, you got to shoot. But there's, as you get higher in sports, it's all about how quickly you can understand where you need to go, right? Obviously, you want to have the ability to get there for sure, but it's making those like millisecond decisions.
Yeah, and one drill we'll do as a warm-up drill, a sprint drill, where we'll do, they're kind of jumping in and out on the spot, and then I'll yell go, and they got to react and sprint. I'll have them turn around, and I'll yell left or right. They have to turn that direction, and I have guys that will put their thumbs out in front of them, the left and the right, to see which
it's,
way they're
oh
going.
My goodness, I do that with kids in hockey. They're like, what wing am I? I'm like, where's your left hand? Yeah. That's left wing,
well,
buddy.
16 to 20-year-old junior players still haven't figured it out.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's music to my ears, because I feel like, what's wrong with these kids? Am I the worst coach in Canada? I can't get them to understand their left or right.
No. So it's something they have to react to a different stimulus, like, because that's the nature of sport, right? You never know what's going to happen. You can't. Yeah. If we did, no one would watch. No one would play, right? So being able to react to what's happening in real time is what kind of separates you.
So Melissa Lojoin. So how do you evolve? Like, players are always, they want to get bigger, they want to get stronger, they want to get faster. So you're a strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. What do you work on that allows you to get better?
So, you know, I got in our exit meetings, I was sure to ask each player, you know, what did you like, what did you not like? And one of the biggest compliments one of our players had given me was, I felt like this year we were really performance driven. Like, you were trying to make us better in the gym. And so that comes from, you know, just thinking of injury prevention. We, like you mentioned, we had a bunch of injuries this year.
Yeah.
Other thing, like, I, it's maybe another controversial take, I don't back squat my guys ever. I never put a barbell on their back.
Front squat, right?
Not even.
I
don't spinal load, because, you know, I can do a hip thrust with them that they can load their legs and they take the spine out of it. Especially you look at tall boys, we have most of our D core is over 6 feet. And they are long limbs. They can't, they're so strong in the lower body, their core is not strong enough to support a max load on their back.
Okay.
So you're just adding, you know, spinal loading when you don't necessarily need to do that. So everything I kind of do is I look at what's happening on the ice, what's the stressors that are happening on the ice, how can I mitigate that, and how can I help prepare the body for that? And then you're just, when you get into a rash of injuries, you're just kind of, you know, taking it day by day and you know, adapting on the fly.
Melissa Lowe joins us. Now, you mentioned the hip. Are you talking the hip thrusters where your feet are on the ground and you got the barbell over top, and now they just lift it off so you kind of have your head rested on the bench?
Yeah. So I've got guys that can put 7 plates on a side. You know, and then that, if you try to do a similar load on a squat, their spine is just getting completely compressed.
Right.
So it's a more functional movement, I find, because I'm trying to get at the hips. So take the spine out of the...
Yeah.
You still have to do core loading, and we'll do a trap bar deadlift. We'll do stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't find a benefit. I'll split squat them. Like, I'll have... Because hockey players, just speaking specifically in hockey...
Yeah, one
are
leg.
Are way stronger even in a split position with a wider base of support, because that's more, you know, common in sport. But they're never evenly distributed on the both skates. So they're a lot stronger in a split squat where one leg's forward, one leg's back, or even in a single leg position. They're able to brace for it better than they are just double leg standing.
Now, what about Bulgarian split squats?
Oh, yeah.
The worst. Like, whoever invented that should be shot. I hate them, but I get that they're good.
I had, so we have a couple guys going to the A next week, and they're training with me this week. And I did apologize because I didn't touch them early enough to have less soreness in the season. So by the time I got back to using them, it had been like October. So guys hadn't maybe done them since the end of August, and I heard about it for a week. They still bring it up. They're like, "Hey, remember when you do Bulgarians? I was sore to the game day." So I apologized to them today. I was like, "Okay, so training camp, be prepared. We're gonna do Bulgarians so that I can touch them throughout the year without guys being sore." Because they'll do them in the summer,
right?
And then they get to training camp, and we're maybe not touching that. You're not touching them, you know, to maybe October, and then they don't have the same tolerance to that movement. So I did say to them, like, so be prepared. They're going to be Bulgarians in training camp.
Now, when you started this year, because you've been the assistant for 5 years, then you become the head strength and conditioning coach, and defensemen were falling like flies. I think they used 12 defensemen in the first month or something ridiculous. So not only your strength and conditioning, but you're also in charge of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. The difference is massive, right? Like, strength, people are healthy. Okay, well, you know what? Maybe get a little bit heavier here. What's the key when you're rehabbing? And I don't have to talk about a specific player's injury, but let's just generalize and, like, the, you know, shoulder injuries, mm-hmm. you know, fairly common knee injury. So what is the key thing when a player's hurt? Because I think there's lots of young players out there, 12, 13, 14, 15, they get injured. I'm not sure they're getting the proper rehabilitation.
So we have a great training staff, Jimmy McKnight, is athletic therapist, and Doc Ed Badusko. So I kind of lean into them. They basically give me the guidelines, and then I just operate within that. And a lot of it is, you know, and I will use a specific example because he deserves it. Ethan McKenzie missed 4 months.
Yeah.
He broke both bones in his wrist. Bunch of ligament damage.
Oof.
So, and it's his draft year.
Yeah.
So he gets hurt in November. He literally just came back for the end of the season. And, you know, at the beginning, you can't do much with that injury. He was doing conditioning. He was doing some lower body stuff. And credit to him, he had the best, you know, mindset and mentality the whole time. He was never down, which it can, because it can be a slog when you're out. He missed 41 games, you know, and so he, we worked on other, this other arm. Like he was a smaller defenseman. He put on some, we put on some mass, because you never have that uninhibited time in the season. You know, he was working, he spent every single day of the season basically with me. So you basically just work on their other weaknesses until you get clearance to start, okay, let's do some range of motion. And then if that goes well, okay, then we start doing some basic strength stuff, maybe just gripping. So, and a lot of it depends on the athlete doing their homework. And so he had a stress ball that he'd be at school every day the minute he got clearance to do that. And then you just progress it. And that, I, that's made me a better trainer 100%, because you, it's trial and error a lot of the time. And, right, and you don't necessarily think of certain exercises like, oh, you need both hands for that. Did not realize that, because, you know, you kind of think conceptually that's going to work. And then you realize really quick, oh no, like there's a couple, I had a couple of those moments. It's like, okay, let's try something different. But yeah, it just depends on, you know, the injury, how long they're going to be out. And you just, it's stable, and there's peaks and valleys. And he experienced that a little bit when, you know, 2 days go really great, and then the next day he's super sore and we take a step back. So, you know, it's all about just, in the time that you can't rehab that injury, because there's always a period where you just got to leave it alone. That's when you're working on your other weaknesses. You're training your other limbs that are available. You're working on your conditioning. And then you just start chipping away at the injury and, you know,
how do you balance, because obviously the strength and conditioning, there's a lot of physical part to it, but there is the mental aspect, and, you know, mentally get fatigued. A guy who's been hurt for 3 months can probably never see the end, never see, there's never any light in the tunnel. He's just like, oh my God, I'm never going to play again. And for a lot of these players, there's lots of pressure. It's their draft year. I want to make a good impression. Is there like a mental training portion of strength and conditioning? And if not, do you think there should be?
For sure. And I think it's, I wouldn't say mental, it's the emotional side.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm not, I'm in a room full of men here. I'm not going to, but I do think that's been a benefit of me being a female, is that the relationships I have are, I'm very close to the players, that they have the comfort to come and tell me what's going on.
And be vulnerable.
And be vulnerable. And, yeah. And I'm not saying like that a male might not have that same relationship, but I think just on the surface, because I'm a female, and I can be tough. I give them a hard time, but you know, they feel more comfortable, because that does impact you. Like you break up with your girlfriend, you didn't sleep that night. It's good that I know that, so that I'm like, okay, like this, things are lining up. Or, you know, if you're having some other issues that you don't feel comfortable telling anybody about, you know, that's impacting your overall health, that's a huge part. So I don't necessarily say the mental side of things, because, you know, there's great mental coaches. We have one that works with the team sporadically. But I think the emotional side is something that gets overlooked for sure. And especially in hockey culture, a lot of times it's like, oh, just suck it up. Mm-hmm. But there's such an impact to your performance if your emotional state is, you know.
And lots of times, just talking about it, you don't have to give them a solution. It's just, okay, you know, and the person's like, oh, I talked about it.
Now
I can lift 5 more pounds.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not as tensed up. I'm not as angry or whatever it is. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Melissa Lowe joins us here, strength and conditioning coach for the Edmonton Oil Kings, as well as Grant McEwen Athletics. Hips and glutes are so major important. And hip issues really impact everything else, right? You talked about, I'm sure the bad hips, you know, the hip bones connected to the knee bone, all that song is definitely true. And, you know, you talked about foot strength is something that is a problem for hockey players, because the skate really gives you, the skates are so much better now that the foot doesn't have to be that strong. So this might sound like a strange question, but what are things to do to help young people strengthen their feet, especially for hockey players?
So, at any given opportunity I have my guys lift barefoot with socks, because that's gross, but barefoot.
Okay.
Because, you know, even shoes, they do a lot of the work for you. And especially, like, I'm very particular on what shoes I want my guys wearing when we're doing sprints and stuff. So the worst shoes you can wear are, you know, knitted shoes with a big puffy sole. Like, those are lifestyle shoes. Those are great for walking around the mall. They're not just training shoes.
Okay.
You want something stiff, so that you have that support when you go to cut like a pro agility or a 5-10-5 drill. But all my guys, and that's always, they always, if they haven't lifted barefoot before, they're always like, oh, I don't want to do this. And then the reward for me by the end of the season, by the end of the off season program, they're like, do I have to put my shoes on? Like, they just get used to it.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. And that always comes from, like, last year we had 3 ankle injuries. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to start working on some barefoot stuff. And so all our guys...
Ankle flexion, I hear, is a big thing for hockey.
Yeah, they don't have any.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, stuff like that. We had so many high ankle sprains last year. So just stuff, you know, barefoot work, a lot of just, you know, learning to ground through your feet and not have the artificial support of a shoe. That's going to set you up so that when you're in the skate... You know, you still have some muscle tone. You have, you know, strength in your foot, not just the skate doing the work.
That makes a lot. I love it. So we're going to talk now about the, you know, the challenge of training hockey. And then all of a sudden you're training basketball and you're training volleyball and you're training track and field. And we'll get to all that next here with Melissa Lowe on Who Is It Wednesday on the Gregor Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Hey, Greg, this is an excellent interview. Not enough people talk about functional movement. Gym strong and sports strong are very different. Functional movement also reduces injury risk. I really enjoyed this interview with Melissa. That one comes from Dylan. And are you a big believer in like functional movement? Because you know, we talk about the Oral Kings, but then you also have the job with Grant McEwen. And you got eight teams. So you got a soccer team and a hockey team and basketball teams and volleyball teams. And those sports are very different.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's great. I've found the crossover of, you know, you can loop basketball, soccer, and hockey similar. You know, they have different energy systems, but they have to move side to side. There's a lot of lateral components. Volleyball is its own monster.
A lot of rotation.
Lots of rotation, lots of jumping there. It doesn't seem like there would be a cardio element, but I've learned from leaning into, you know, sport coaches and athletes that they have to be able to play three sets. And sure, a set might be, you know, 10 seconds, but they it adds up. So that's been something that I've been working on, is building out the conditioning for volleyball. It's something that maybe I wouldn't have thought.
So what would you do to get better conditioning for volleyball?
So I've been very lucky, of great support of the McEwen athletics department. Anything I've asked for, they've gotten me. So we got two assault bikes, so air bikes, which was not a popular purchase by the athletes. But that's
what is an assault bike?
It's the big fan bikes. So those Rogues.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see one now. Yeah, I just Googled it quick. Okay.
Yeah. So we got two of those, and I do.
Are they like way harder than a?
Way harder.
Okay.
Yeah. So they are. Anybody listening that's looking to buy a cardio equipment, it is the best bang for your buck, because you never plateau on it. Because if you get stronger, because you're creating the resistance through the fan. So okay. If you get stronger and able to push more onto the pedals, there's more resistance acting on you. So whereas like with a spin bike, you go to the same gear all the time, eventually it gets easy.
Yeah.
With an assault bike, or that's just a brand name, but an air bike,
yeah.
you always are adapting to it. So with the volleyball players, I did have some pukers. We would do like 2 minute blocks on the bike.
So you'd have to bike as fast as you could for 2 minutes?
1 mile. It's a 1 mile test, so most of them can do it in 2 minutes. Yeah, so they have to get a mile distance accumulated. So, but it's funny because, you know, there's some big bodies on volleyball,
yeah.
But they're different bodies than hockey. So yeah. My fastest hockey player can do a mile in 1 minute and 38 seconds. And the volleyball players are all like 2 minutes, because they just don't have the same mass on. But I was not popular implementing assault bike and we'll do like 5 cal sprints. We'll do 30 ons, 30 offs. We'll do just arms, just legs. So a lot of elements that, you know, they haven't done before. So that's kind of been a big add to the program.
Did they notice a difference though when they were playing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
and the coaches. Now they're not as fatigued late in a set, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the coaches were saying that. And this will be my first off season that I'll be able to do all the programming for. And they haven't really had, any of the teams haven't really had that. So I think the real litmus test for me will be next season. You know, because I was hired in September and kind of jumped on the moving train. A lot of teams had started.
Okay.
So I was just trying to, you know, get touches with the athletes and start to build out the program. This off season, which they've just started 2 weeks ago, will kind of be the bread and butter that hopefully we'll see translate into more wins next year.
So you get a lot of different athletes that you come to. What is there one consistent area that you've seen that people have either trained incorrectly, they have an incorrect movement pattern that you always have to correct?
Not necessarily incorrect movement pattern. The biggest thing that I've seen across the board is a lack of, for lack of a better word, but a lack of intensity. You should never do an exercise passively. You should attack every rep. So if that's something I've had to like drive home, is that, you know, if you're lifting weight over your head or if you're throwing a ball, it should never look leisurely. Okay. Right? It's because sport isn't. There's very rarely are you just out for a leisurely skate or, you know, you're just jogging up the court. You always have to attack. And if you don't have that same mentality in the gym, it's not going to cross over, because everything you're doing in a sports training context should be with intensity and, you know, you're attacking that movement, because that's going to translate over to your sport. So I've seen that across the boards, and I've maybe more on the female side. I'm like, be mean with it. Like, throw that ball.
Okay.
You know, like, be aggressive. And so that's, would say, the one thing that's been kind of, I've seen through all four sports, is that just kind of focusing on making sure you're attacking each exercise that we're doing with intensity.
What about engaging the core and how so many people don't know how to do it? Because honestly, I'd never heard of it. Now, granted, training, you know, it wasn't like I was doing lots of training when I was that much younger, but I really probably was 30 when a guy said, well, you're not engaging your core. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then he explained it to me and I was like, oh man, like, this made a big difference when all of a sudden I'm deadlifting and now all of a sudden I engage my core. And I'm like, well, that felt way easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the same. I was back squatting 315 pounds, not knowing how to stabilize my core. And I have back issues, remnants from it. And that's the biggest thing, because when people hear, oh, like, use your core, they think suck in.
Yes.
But it's actually, like, the best analogy I have for any athlete or anybody training is, you think of a pop can. And if the pop can's closed and full and you push on either side of it, it pushes back, right? So you think of the cylinder. If it's empty and open and you push on the sides of it, the pop can collapses.
Yes.
So your core is that cylinder. So when you have load underneath it, you need to be the full pop can.
Like, bracing yourself back, almost.
Right? And it's funny, I get some really fun responses when I go, if I'm going to sucker punch you in the gut, what are you going to do to protect yourself? And I've had to correct a couple hockey players that punch me back's not the answer. But you would instinctually know. Or even when you put in a sport context, you go, okay, you see somebody's about to hit you or you're about to hit somebody, you know how to brace your core. You need to have that same feeling when you go to pick up this bar, because they know how to do it in a certain context. It's just translating it into the gym setting, because you should never touch a weight without having that feeling of bracing your core, loading for contact, essentially.
So that's one of the things that anybody out there who has a son or daughter who's starting to lift weights, that'd be the number one thing, ensuring that they have proper core engagement, because if they start with that, that's like got to be the foundation.
Absolutely.
Right? And then everything kind of spreads out. I like that explanation with the pop can. Everybody kind of think can visualize that and understand what it is. Now, I always like to do a little research on my guests when we have them in for Who Is It Wednesday. And you know, I've been around the rink a lot, so I bump into certain people. I heard that you had a set of what you call, or what they were telling me about, the golden sneakers that you have.
Yeah.
From the playoff run in 2022.
Yeah. 2022. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, did you wear these? Like, are you superstitious? You wore these all the time?
So I'm a sneakerhead. That's the start.
How many sneakers you got?
Oh, I have an Instagram account to keep track of them. Literally.
Come on. Like, are we talking like 100?
Probably in that ballpark, yeah.
And so you wear them like once a year?
No. So like, I have game day shoes. Every season I'll get game day shoes, and then that I wear to the rink. And then
only one pair?
Yeah. I wear that all season.
That one pair?
Yeah, that one pair.
Okay.
For just game days. That's the only time they get worn. Okay. But then I get playoff shoes. And so the 2022 season, I got a pair of, and they're just street shoes. Like, I wear to the rink and then they get put in the locker. But I wore these gold, solid gold Stan Smiths, Adidas Stan Smiths.
All right.
And we won the championship, and we won the game I wore them to at the Memorial Cup, we won as well. So obviously Memorial Cup didn't go the way we wanted,
right.
But those shoes were never getting worn again because the memories that they had. So I started the process of getting the team from that championship to sign them. So that I had to wait. The first signature had to be Jake Neighbors, the captain of the ship. So when he came through with St. Louis last season, he was the first signature. And then I have a Gooley shoe where Gooley signed, and I have a Neighbors shoe, and I've filled out. I have a couple guys left, but I'd be like, "Who do you want? Do you want the Ghoulie shoe or do you want the Nabe shoe?" And they fill them out.
All right. Okay.
So yeah, so they're still in my locker for when certain guys might come through that I'm missing. But yeah, those are the gold shoes.
Now, I like the definition. So these aren't my words. I want to clarify that quote. She has the culinary palate of a child. Is this true?
I know exactly where that's coming from. Yes, it is true.
Yeah, you have
discerning. I'm discerning.
Yeah, you have lots of chicken fingers.
They have every time we have team stuff, they have to make sure there's chicken fingers for Mo or something.
Okay,
plain.
Plum sauce.
Yeah. Oh, they're plain plum sauce.
Now, what do you mean something plain? Like, you're not like Jamie McLennan where you have pasta with no sauce. You are
on the side, and then I'll like.
Oh my god! Oh, yeah. I've never met like you eat. You'll just eat pasta with butter.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Yeah. It's great.
Oh my god! Like no pesto.
I don't mind pesto. Okay. I don't like something saturated in sauce.
Okay.
I'll put some sauce on myself, but yeah, the plainer the better.
Oh, really? Any other? So now how big are you on the strength and conditioning intertwining with nutrition?
I have resources. Definitely sometimes they're, you know, I try to exist in my wheelhouse, and you learn a little bit throughout your degree and different courses that you do. But a lot of times I am referring out to nutrition. Game day questions, you know, how should I be eating before the game, post game, all the, you know, how much protein should I be getting, all that stuff. I'm pretty competent and I can direct the guys with. But anything with, you know, targeted approaches where this guy's got to put on mass, we always just try to refer out to experts in the field.
Yeah, nutritionists.
You have your general, you know, we're general practitioners in the sense where like we have a little information on everything, and then when it's out of our scope, we'll look for experts to direct them.
So do you have like a, when the team and you're working out with players, right when they're done, are you having like a post workout shake? Is that all mandatory stuff right after?
Yeah, they have post workout shakes. They have, you know, a lot of them have their own protein powders. I got some guys into certain type of protein bar that if they don't have they didn't bring their shaker for some reason, they know Mel's got the box in her locker, they can go grab it. They know they should be having something, and that becomes even more pertinent. Like in the playoffs, they were made for everybody, and it wasn't really an option. It was like, take it. There was tart cherry juice. There was usually pizza because they just needed carbs. So it's definitely, you know, the Oil Kings operate like a pro team. We're very lucky. So, you know, our players don't necessarily have the same junior hockey experience as other teams because we do have the resources being in the same arena as the Oilers. So they definitely have a lot at their fingertips. So they can go into the kitchen and there's every, you know, protein powder that they might need. So that's all kind of taken care of for them.
So you were an assistant strength and conditioning coach for 5 years and you just wrapped up your first season. What was the most unexpected learning curve now that you were, you know, like making the decisions?
I think the biggest thing for me, and it's a confidence thing too, is that the buck stops with me learning that, you know, when there's 23 pairs of eyes on you and you need to know why you're doing something and you need to, you know, make the decisions and kind of adapt in the moment. But that was the biggest thing, was I've always worked under great strength coaches at all my different jobs. I've worked under some great ones in the city, and I just kind of had to, I deferred to them. So now that was the biggest learning curve for me, is like, no, I'm,
yeah, I'm the buck stop here.
The buck stops here. And yeah. I take pride in that too, that like, if, you know, a guy's not ready, that's on me. So just kind of making sure that when I go into the workout, I know my intention and I'm not, you know, straying from that. Obviously you have to make adjustments, as you go, like with the injuries that we had. You know, at one point I had 8 guys, and yeah. you've been in our weight room.
I was there, yeah.
It gets crowded, and when you have 8 guys with like 5 different injuries, and then on a game day when we're working out before the game, you got your roster players coming through, so you just have to adapt. But I think the biggest thing for me was like, you know, and being a female, maybe it took me a little bit longer to, you know, lean into the being the alpha, but that was something that like, okay, you know, every single one of these guys trust me. I just have to make sure I'm, you know, leaning into that and yeah. that I'm confident in what I'm doing.
Brian Cheeseman is just sexting. Hey guys, I just want to say I've had the pleasure of working with Melissa. She's the best strength coach I've had the pleasure with. The Oil Kings and the Griffins beyond lucky to have her in her corner from Cheese.
Thanks,
the big man. No, he's a long time. Is he the longest or second longest member of the Oil Kings, I think?
Well, Rogan, Dean is.
Yeah, so Dean is, and then I think Cheese
then
is second.
Cheeser, probably, yeah. When I originally...
How's Cheese? Did you ever get Cheeser in the gym? How's his strength?
I haven't trained him, but he reps my merch. My boys in the summer came up with the slogan, "Get off the porch." That's from a football pump-up speech.
Okay.
And so Cheese was like, I need one of those shirts. So he reps my merch in the gym. But, you know, I owe Cheese a lot because when I originally asked the former head strength coach, Eric Kiebernick, if I could shadow him, that's how it all started.
Okay.
I definitely don't use my last name to my advantage. I try to get my own way. So I asked if I could shadow, and he went to Cheese, and Cheese obviously knew my dad. And you know, they talked about it and if I'd be a good fit, you know, being a female, do you think that would be okay? And Cheese was super supportive of it. And so, you know, flash forward now and here I am. So.
How many women in the WHL are in your role?
So we're lucky. My role doesn't necessarily exist with most teams.
Okay.
A lot of times the AT, the athletic therapist,
right,
has to just write up a workout. And I have guys that train through the summer that play on other teams, and a lot of times they don't work out throughout the year. And we have that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have that little bit of an adjustment period when guys get traded to us that, what do you mean we're working out after the game? Like, there's some of those conversations. But they're, so in Red Deer, they have kind of a director that I think kind of oversees some of that. That's a female. And then Wenatchee has a female nutritionist. And then there's females ATs, which is, I think there's three female athletic therapists throughout the league. But in the traditional strength conditioning role, I think I might be the first.
And do you have aspirations of, do you want to go pro?
I've always, like, was always the end goal. And I think this year, I would never turn down a pro opportunity. You always want to be in the best league in the world. I've been very lucky in my career. I've had the opportunity to train Connor and Leon and Darnell. Throughout COVID, I was training some of those guys. So I've had the opportunity to train some of the best in the world. And it's always a thrill when, you know, they trust you. But right now, being the head, I really feel, in being a female and in junior hockey, I feel like I'm making a really big difference.
Yeah.
And just because, you know, I don't know if you have that same impact at the pros. You know, junior hockey has an unfortunate culture around it that it's kind of been in the, you know, spotlight recently. And
yeah.
I think that me being in the role that I am is important. And mm-hmm. I know those guys, you know, you make such a, I have a 16-year-old guy come in and they leave at 20. Like, the impact that you've had with their, you know, development,
yes,
is huge. Obviously, like, if a pro opportunity came around, I wouldn't turn it down. But I'm really happy in where I am right now.
Quickly, out of Leon, Connor, and Darnell, when you were training them, was there one thing that really impressed you? Like, obviously, they're elite athletes, but was there one thing of strength in training where you're just like, oof, I wasn't expecting that?
Well, obviously, Connor's speed is next to none. Like, we did hill sprints, and I was like, okay, he's gone. Like, no one's catching him. You know, Leon's, I think, coming from, he played soccer when he was younger. He's probably the best hockey player that I've seen at track movements.
Okay.
He's very good at track stuff. Also, I should Tyson Berry trains with me in the summer. So Tyson, he's really strong, which I don't think maybe people would expect. And is, like, he's a machine on the assault bike. That's his
thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice. I like it. Well, Melissa, thanks so much. This is, you know, we got a lot of texts that people just enjoyed. It's very, not only entertaining, but very educational. And, you know, wish you all the continued success. We'll definitely have to have you back again, maybe before the season starts, and kind of see what an off-season program looks like.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.